Amnon, thank you for that uplifting, optimistic assessment of the situation between Israelis and Palestinians. So I'd like to begin the next phase of this discussion by asking you the prescriptive question. If you said, just focusing on one of the items you identified, namely how to create a strong Palestinian leadership that has a monopoly of force in the areas that it controls, even in the West Bank, let alone West Bank and Gaza, what do you prescribe? How do you achieve that? And how do you take advantage of the next several months if we are in a period of weak leadership? How do we make the most of this period? What can even the weak leaders, and I would include in that lame duck presidents, what can they do to try to make it more likely that when new presidents and new leaders emerge, that there's a better likelihood of success? Amnon?
Well, I'm sorry for not being able to be more optimistic, but I'm not going to lie, not to myself and not to you. And we have been very optimistic 15 years ago, and look what optimism creates us. What can be done? Things can be done, and I think that things should be done. First of all, as long as there will be no terror activities or very low profile of terror activities, it encourages people to dare more and to do more. Secondly, I believe that Israel should do a very clear separation between the West Bank and Gaza. I believe that if in the last year, and it's not too late now, to allow the West Bank to boom economically, to help the Palestinians in the West Bank to improve their daily life, to make clear to Palestinians living in the West Bank that the option of that is provided by the Palestinian Authority, that free movement from one city to another, or easy movement, if not free movement, from one place to another is possible, that it will encourage outsiders to invest money in the West Bank, and money is waiting to be invested. While in Gaza, the Hamas will continue to run the business, well, maybe with more personal safety, without Israeli retaliation, and no Hamas, hopefully no Hamas or other organizations rocket launch to Israel, and we can create a dramatic difference between daily life in the West Bank and Gaza, and show people what they can offer to their kids in the future, it might help. And I think that it is possible. It is even not only possible, it is easy to do with maybe some risk, but limited risk and acceptable risk, in my opinion. And that's what I will do tomorrow. And hopefully, with cooperation of Palestinians or Palestinian security organizations in the West Bank, keep control on any opposition and control and prevent terror attacks. And if there will be, I don't believe in no terror attacks, but small terror attacks here and there, we can live with it. And once the Palestinian economy in the West Bank will boom and things can be changed, and even with the present Palestinian leadership, we might face dramatic changes in the future.
Okay, thank you. Let me open the floor to your comments and questions. Start with Dennis here on the left, and if you could please use the microphones on your table, make sure the light is lit. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Amnon, you mentioned that in negotiating an agreement, the security arrangements would actually be the least complicated. That might be true, I think, at a certain abstract level, but I'd like to pose a question. when I look at where we are today, I see on the two sides a major conceptual gap on security. The IDF, which you know very well, seems to have drawn a lesson from the last 8 years that they have to have complete freedom of action within the West Bank to ensure that the West Bank will not become a platform for attacks, either terror or a launching pad for rockets. The Palestinians have drawn a conclusion from the last 8 years that the only way they can have an independent state is if there's not a single Israeli soldier there. Once that state is declared, they'll say international forces can do the job. And yet the perception, certainly in Israel, is that international forces haven't done the job, even when they seem to have been supposedly vigorous in southern Lebanon when it came to rebuilding Hezbollah. And they're unlikely to do the kind of job that Israelis are doing now when they go operate at night to break up cells in the West Bank. So how would you overcome that conceptual divide on the security arrangements?
By the way, I am quite sure that security arrangements with Syria is easier than most of the other issues between us and Syria. But going back to the Palestinians, first of all, we witness now a complete freedom of action is a wish. Now in the Jenin area, it's quite a big area in the northern part of the West Bank, there is no present of Israeli security forces and almost no interference with what the Palestinian police is doing in this area. And it can be, if it works, and so far it is working fairly well, it can be a beginning of something that we didn't witness before. In the Jenin area, the Palestinian Authority brought in quite a large number of policemen that were trained in different places and took responsibility not only for the city of Jenin but also for a number of key villages around Jenin like Kabatia and Tubas and a few other areas. And Israel, it was of course coordinated with Israel, and the Israeli security forces are not interfering and allowing them, and they are doing a fairly good job. Not only with Palestinian criminals, like stolen cars and things of this nature, they are also confiscating illegal weapons. If they will continue to do a good job, this system can be implemented in other areas. We are already talking about the possibility to do something similar in the area of Bethlehem. And again, if it works, it can work elsewhere. For the time being, I don't believe that an international force is a solution. In the end of the day, the Palestinians will have to do it with their own security forces. I have still a big question mark to whom the Palestinian policeman in Jenin is loyal. To the one who is paying his salary, to Abu Mazen, to the Palestinian law. There is a big question mark, in my opinion, but as long, again, the more the people in Jenin and in the area, and the more the Palestinian police will feel that they are doing a good job, then they will gain confidence, and it might work. In Gaza, it is a total different story. Maybe that in the future, Gaza can be an area in which a third party or an international force can be can replace and take certain responsibilities. Again, it won't be easy because, first of all, we have to agree on their mandate. That's exactly the failure of UNIFIL in Lebanon. According to the mandate, they were allowed to do nothing but to observe and report to New York. But Gaza might be a place in which international force can have a role in the future security of the area.
Thanks. Martin, on the left.
Thank you, Amnon.
Is that mic working in the back?
Lights on.
Sorry? Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
two quick questions. You ended by saying that you sincerely doubted that these two leaders could reach an agreement that would survive, and survive, I should say. But what if Prime Minister Olmert reached an agreement with the expectation that he would not survive? That is, as his last act, his legacy. And that agreement would then be put to a kind of quasi-referendum in a new election. Number one, do you expect that he might try to do that, and how would that be received? The second thing is really, given your experience in the Israeli-Syrian negotiations, if you would give us your assessment of the prospects for reaching an Israeli-Syrian deal, are they as gloomy as on the Palestinian track?
Well, I believe that if we can reach a written agreement with the Palestinians, it can be very helpful in the future, no doubt about it. If it is possible, it can only help. And again, if the Israeli people will be convinced that the Palestinian partner can implement this agreement and can convince us that he's serious implementing the agreement, then I believe that not only through a referendum after the elections, but any future Israeli government will continue and will go with an agreement that was reached legally by an Israeli government. And therefore, if we'll have a written agreement, it will be very powerful for the future. But again, the big question will remain who on the other side is going to implement and promise that the written word will be seen in daily life. Israel and Syria, I think that we are in the very early beginning of a third or a fourth round of talks. So far, you know that the two sides didn't see each other. They're in two separate hotels. The Turks are going in between. This is the kind of a dialogue that is ongoing now. There are more than some optimism on both sides. But we didn't even start to touch the real questions of an Israeli-Syrian peace agreement. I think there is, like with the Palestinians, there is more realism on both sides what can be achieved by each side. And some of the issues are less important than they used to be in the past. For example, water can be easily solved. Security, again, we can find answers for both sides' security. The question of normalization, borders, will remain as tough as they were in the past. And again, I believe that the Syrians will not rush to reach an agreement before it will be clear who is the next American administration. And it will take much more time before we can see serious movement, positive movements on the Israeli-Syrian track.
Alan Gerson, and then David in the back.
Is it on? All right, two questions. First, could you also address the issue of the other regional actors besides Syria, Jordan, Egypt, and Iran, and how they influence events there? And secondly, with regard to your answer to Robert Satlov's question as to your prescription, as I understood it, you focused on a commitment to economic development of the West Bank and an easing of restrictions, but mainly enhanced economic development. That almost seems commonsensical. So I wonder if you could take us through the politics of this. Who would be opposed to this, and why hasn't this been implemented, and what are the roadblocks to implementing it in the future?
Well, about the other players, Jordan, after a long time, start to be more involved in future solution in the West Bank, and there are new voices in Jordan that we didn't hear for the last 20 years, that maybe a confederation is possible. I'm not saying that this is the official Jordanian approach at the moment, but there are people in Jordan that are talking again about a possibility of confederation between the West Bank and Jordan. You all know that the majority of the Jordanian population are Palestinians or of a Palestinian origin. I remember many, many years ago when I met the Jordanian head of intelligence, I asked him, how would you describe a Palestinian living in Jordan? His answer was that any Jordanian from Palestinian origin who have a concrete roof over his head is a Jordanian from a Palestinian origin, and any Palestinian who is living in Jordan with either a tent over his head is a Palestinian living in Jordan. But Jordan is very much worried. And the problems inside Jordan are well known to everybody. Jordan would like an agreement, no doubt. But Jordan is watching carefully what's going on. They are trying to help. They are doing trying to look from the side what's going on. In Egypt, it is a little bit different. First of all, there are no Palestinians in Egypt, but there is Muslim Brothers in Egypt. And the activities of the Hamas and the Iranian involvement in Gaza and the Iranian support in Gaza worries the Egyptians very, very much. After the Hajj, when many Palestinians left Gaza and went to Mecca, Mubarak promised Ehud Barak that they will go back through an Israeli crosspoint. After a few demonstrations, day after day, in El Arish, that was broadcast on the Egyptian television day after day, they allow the Palestinians to go back to Gaza. After the Palestinians broke the fence and the wall between Gaza and Sinai, they were terrified and they were very, very angry. So they are watching very carefully, not because they are so much afraid of the Palestinians in Gaza, but they are very much worried about the influence that it will have on the Muslim Brothers, on Egyptians in Cairo and elsewhere in Egypt. But still, the main countries who are involved or who can influence the situation is Syria, that hosts all the Palestinian opposition leadership, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and others, and orders are coming from Damascus to the territories, and Iran, who are heavily supporting the Hamas in Gaza, who train people from Gaza in Iran and send them back to Gaza, who sent weapons from Iran through the Sinai to Gaza, and sent money. A lot of money is coming from Iran to Gaza to support the Hamas. Why, if it is so easy, why the economy in the West Bank is not booming? There is no good answer. It is supported. Officially, everyone supported. The problems are not with the official directives. The problems are on the ground. Part of it is the outcome of what the especially the Israeli soldiers serving in the West Bank observed from the second armed intifada of the last 7 years. There is a lot of suspicious. You know, crossing a checkpoint can be an easy thing. and it can be very traumatic. It doesn't depend always on the orders, but even going here through an American airport can be easy and can be unpleasant. It is more or less the same in checkpoints in the West Bank. Some checkpoints have been removed. Many roadblocks have been removed. But it was too little, again, my opinion, too little, and maybe a little bit late. It still can be done. I believe that there is a lot of goodwill in Israel, and orders are coming, and hopefully we'll see the impact of those orders on the daily life, but so far it didn't really work. And there is a lot of suspicious, even on the Palestinian side, people are hesitating, shall I go, shall I not go? But there have been thousands of new permits for Palestinians in the West Bank to work in Israel. There have been thousands of Palestinians, businessmen who get permits to go and to move freely to Israel. It should work, and it should have a certain impact, but it was done only recently.
Amnon, just on this question, from your assessment, is your suggestion that it would have been better if Israelis and Palestinians at the highest levels were not focusing their attention on the negotiations, but instead focusing their attention on this set of issues in terms of building up West Bank economic and political infrastructure? Are the negotiations a distraction from that mission, or do you do both at the same time?
No, I would do both. I think that doing both can help both lines, both tracks. I think that orders, well, it can work together. There is no argument between these two activities. We can talk peace and try to reach a solution, and we should improve daily life and do it as fast as possible.
David Makovsky.
I'm known two security questions. One is, we talk about senior people in the defense establishment. In your time in the 90s, there was, it seemed, at least from the outside, that there was more systematic contacts of the Israeli defense establishment with the Palestinians. I'm not talking about the issue of whether military people should be negotiators on the peace process. I'm talking about consultation, security cooperation. I had a feeling on the trip last month and on last several trips that this is not happening now, that there might be unit-level coordination in Jenin or elsewhere, but the systematic level of cooperation at the top is not happening. And the reason why I'm concerned about it is, knowing the Israeli system and how dominant the defense establishment is in it, every cabinet meeting begins with the defense leaders of the defense establishment giving their weekly reports. Do you see a problem there if that cooperation isn't taking place? Is that something you would call for now? And the other question is about the perimeter. Let's take the Jordan Valley. Maybe there'll be different approaches. One would say, look, given the tunnels through Egypt and the like, Israel paid a price by getting out of the Philadelphia Road. Of course, Gaza and Egypt is one case. I'm not equating the two with the West Bank. And others would say, given that lesson, Israel cannot yield the perimeter defense in the West Bank. Or do you say, look, Jordan has a very good track record, and the IDF isn't as crucial there? So how important is it for the IDF for a long time, even in an agreement, to stay around the borders, even if Jenin improves?
Well, no doubt that the high-ranking security officials in Israel, the government will listen to them and the public will listen to them. And that's why the role is very important. But two major things happened in the last 6-7 years. One is the Second Intifada, and the other one is the Second War in Lebanon. In the first one, in the second intifada, the Israeli security officials got the feeling that they have been betrayed by their Palestinian colleagues. And to rebuild the trust is very, very difficult and will take a long time. In the mid-90s, people like Dahlan or Jibril Rajoub used to fulfill their promises, at least most of them. And the feeling was that they are serious about the commitments they took on themselves. The second intifada that started under Arafat was a huge setback, not only to trust, but to any future cooperation. Secondly, the key figures among the security Palestinian security apparatus disappeared. The people who are now leading the Palestinian security forces, I would call them second-class security leaders. And there is less trust, much less than we used to have in the past with the other people. The second thing is the Lebanese war. Once more, like something that happened after the Yom Kippur War, some of the high-ranking officers in the army felt that once there are problems, they are left alone. And they are the ones to pay the price for any failure, include political failures. And they want to take less risks. Why should they take the risk? Let the politicians tell them what they want to do. Let the politicians explain exactly what is the mission, what they want the security to provide. And it's something that no one will say out and clear, but I believe that it is in the back of the mind of more than few people who are carrying responsibility on their shoulders. Secondly, I would say it has to do with the political leadership. When Rabin was the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense, and he made clear what he thinks and what he wants, it was very difficult to argue with him. By the way, it was very similar with Sharon. Very, very similar with Sharon when Sharon was the Prime Minister without being the Minister of Defense. It is different now.
Sam Lewis, and then Marvin Kell.
Amnon, you certainly are carrying out your commitment of Zev Schiff, first to national security, second to truth, and that makes you really an appropriate lecturer for this lecture. I want to ask you about Gaza. What chance do you think there is for the pause or truce or whatever to be in effect seriously 3 to 6 months from now? Do you believe that it is inevitable, almost, that it will break down and that there will be a major Israeli military operation decided to go in? And if so, how will you get out?
I'll try to be optimistic. Look, there is something in the dramatic change. Without being in Gaza, I'm sure that there is something very strong in the daily life of every young man and old man in Gaza. I heard that now in thousands they are going to the beach. They are moving around. They are not afraid of an Israeli retaliation. Although since the declaration of the ceasefire, there have been few rockets launched into Israel. If this ceasefire will last for 3-4 months, it brings more and more power to those who or to the Hamas to destroy it. The Hamas will gain, no doubt, that the Hamas politically will gain out of this ceasefire as long as it will last. No doubt that the Hamas will translate it, that they can offer people in Gaza normal daily life. But here comes the but. There is an opposition in Gaza. I don't know what might happen if we make some arrest of Islamic Jihad key figures in the West Bank or in an engagement, a few leaders of the Islamic Jihad in the West Bank will got killed. What will be the response of the Islamic Jihad from Gaza? Or even if there is an engagement with Hamas guys in the West Bank and some of them are captured or killed, what the Hamas will decide? Are they going to retaliate or not? I have no answer. That's why I believe that the coming 2 to 3 months are crucial. If we can keep quiet daily life for 3 months, it will give more strength to the ceasefire. But it is fragile, it is totally unclear, and the chance is that the ceasefire will break down is higher than it will last for a very long period of time. And then what will Israel be forced immediately to go for a big military operation? The chance is higher than in the past. Yes. And again, the question is, what will be the Hamas, if the Hamas will launch 3 missiles that will hit empty areas, it is one story. And if it hit the school, it's a different story. If there are no casualties, it's one story. If there are many casualties, it is a different story. This is the rules of the game that we're in.
You can just finish Sam's question, but if I can just ask you, what then would be the objective of a military operation in Gaza?
There can be basically 2 objectives. One is to get rid of the Hamas. I have a big question mark if it's possible. We can beat the Hamas, but the Hamas has leadership outside Gaza. They have leadership in Syria. I believe that any military operation will give some time for Hamas members to run to Gaza, to leave Gaza and run to the Sinai. Some of them will go underground.
Literally.
Literally. But some of them will remain there and some of them will come out after a while. Because there is an underground preparations in Gaza and they are well prepared, I'm quite sure about it. And the question, I believe that any Israeli big operation in Gaza, we are not going to stay there for more than the needed period of time. It can be a few months, it can be 1 year. I don't believe that we'll stay there more than that. And then what? I believe that the interest of the Hamas will be immediately or as soon as possible to show everybody that they are still there. And therefore, I doubt that even if they will be badly beaten, if we can get rid from the Hamas with a military operation. And the other goal is a new ceasefire that will follow a big operation. They will calculate the losses. They will understand that they need a new ceasefire and will go back where we are now.
Marvin.
My very strong impression is that the Israeli people right now are absorbed with the question of Iran and whether Iran is going to be allowed to develop nuclear weapons. My impression is not that the Palestinian issue is the foremost thing on their minds. Could be wrong, but it's my impression. Do you believe, sir, that Israel will have to take military action to forestall such an eventuality, and do you think it can't succeed?
I believe that Iran is a threat, a serious threat, not only to Israel, but to the whole region. I believe that the Iranians will continue to do whatever is possible to reach military nuclear capabilities. I believe that most of the free world react too late, because not only raw materials, equipments, raw materials, and knowledge were brought in to Iran from many free countries, not only from North Korea or Pakistan. And the Iranians want to reach nuclear military capability. They're working hard. Attacking or what a military operation can achieve. First of all, we have to know exactly where are the locations, and it is not one location like the nuclear reactor in Iraq in 81. It is not like the story in Syria. There are a number of locations. Iran, as the Iranian border is about 1,000 kilometers far away from Israel. I believe that the Iranians are listening very carefully and even maybe reading the New York Times. And they prepare themselves by very modern Soviet air defense systems, by heavy fortified positions under deep underground. And a military operation is always possible. There is a cost, but it is possible. The question, what will be the outcome of such a military operation? If it's going to stop or to postpone the Iranian nuclear program for a number of years, then it makes sense. If it is just, or if it will not postpone and will not destroy the Iranian program, then for sure there will be a retaliation. And therefore, someone have to have much better information than I have now in order to tell you theoretically if it's possible and what can be done. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I believe that it might be possible, and it might be very difficult, but you have to have the information. I'm sure that not only Israel collect information about the Iranian nuclear program, and I honestly cannot answer the question.
Yap Van Wessel, and then Reif El Omari. Here, use this mic.
I have a question about the desirability from the Israeli point of view for a rapprochement between Hamas and Fatah. Those who argue that it's better for Israel say that Hamas can block, has a veto right over any agreement between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Those who argue against say that if Hamas and the PA reconcile, then they will have a negative influence on the Palestinian Authority that will make it more difficult to reach an agreement. What's your opinion?
I think that sooner or later, first of all, it's an internal Palestinian issue that Israel can have very little impact on the will of the two sides, what they would like to do. I heard from Fatah members that they think that reconciliation with the Hamas is a must from Fatah point of view. They believe that sooner or later they will have to do it. They have some preconditions. Some of them have some preconditions that the Hamas will withdraw from the positions they hold in Gaza and let the PA go back to Gaza as it used to be before they took over by force. but I believe that reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas in the long term is needed for the Palestinians, and it will be needed for any Israeli-Palestinian agreement, with one condition, that the Hamas will not have the upper hand. Because it is possible, or it's not impossible, that sooner or later the Hamas might have the upper hand, and the Hamas has great ambitions to take over the PLO, by the way. One of their goals is to prepare the ground for taking over the positions of the PLO, because, as you know, all the agreements between Israel and the Palestinians are, the title is PLO and Israel. And therefore, the Hamas guys are trying for quite a long time to improve their positions and take over the PLO. And there is a risk, but I believe that whatever we are going to do or not to do, Palestinians will try sooner or later to reconcile between the two sides.
Dave Pollack in the center back. Okay, took a pass. Dave?
Thank you very much. I was struck in your opening remarks, if I understood you correctly, you said that the right of return and a complete halt to settlement construction would be preconditions for any Palestinian-Israeli agreement, if I understood what you said. Did you mean that to apply just to the current Palestinian leadership because, as you said, they're so weak that they can't make any compromises, or did you mean that that is likely to remain the case even in the long-term future? And if so, did you mean to include all settlements or only those beyond the fence? And in either case, does this mean that an agreement is impossible?
No, I'm not talking about preconditions. I'm talking about things that will have to be agreed in an Israel-Palestinian agreement. Look, the question of a right of return by the Israelis is a threat to the existence of Israel as a Jewish state. And you can say it's more psychological than real, but it is seen by most of the Israelis as a real threat to the existence of Israel. And of course, when we are talking about the right of return, we are talking about of return to Israel, not to the Palestine, not to the Palestinian state. For the Palestinian leadership to give up the right of return without an agreement that is going to be implemented tomorrow, that will show the Palestinian people that they have their own independent state with agreed borders and constitutions that function like an independent state, it might be very, very difficult, politically speaking. On the Palestinian side, the Israeli settlements, and especially the continuation of new constructions in Israeli settlements, is a threat and is seen by Palestinians as if all the Israeli governments are planning, have a grand plan, an ongoing grand plan to create a new situation on the ground that will make the separation impossible in the future. I believe that it is fully understood by Abu Mazen and his team that there will be swaps and there will be blocks of settlements that will remain in the agreement as part of Israel, no doubt about it. It is the same in certain neighborhoods around Jerusalem. I'm talking about those settlements that are out of those agreed swap areas in Jerusalem that will be agreed as part of the overall agreement. And at the moment, the Palestinians are looking on new constructions in the West Bank as one of the biggest threats for any future solution.
Amnon, let me close by asking you a question that I can imagine that if Zev were here, he would take the opportunity of posing to you in this audience. It's almost 2 years since the start of the Lebanon War. Since the Lebanon War, the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF, have gone through an earthquake of public scrutiny, an earthquake of internal change. You who know the IDF so well, what is your estimate, what is your assessment, both of the process that the IDF has gone through to improve itself over the last 2 years, the last year especially, and the outcome of that process?
No doubt that the war in Lebanon in summer 2006 was an earthquake for the IDF. Although I believe that the IDF, with what they had and with the training, the very little training, especially for the reserve units, we could do and end the war in total different positions and achievements. And the one main thing that we had to do, or the IDF did, is to regain self-confidence. And I think it was done. I think that the morale of the reserve units is very much different than it was 2 years ago. I think that the lessons, or most of the lessons, have been learned and executed, not only in training and not only in other areas. And bear in mind that all what we were talking was about the ground forces, almost nothing about the Israeli Air Force, that its performance during the war in Lebanon was fairly high, although there was no opponent on the other side and no air defense on the other side and no air force on the other side. The Navy has some difficulties, but again, it was challenged by one Iranian missile that hit a missile boat. Most of the lessons had to be learned in the ground forces, and I believe that the new chief of staff worked hard to change the self-confidence of the IDF leadership, and I think that the IDF is now in a very, in a much better position. There is still things that has to be done, but they are working hard and they are doing very well.
Amnon, let me thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for being part of this inaugural lecture. Sarah, Hadar, thank you for being part of this event. I thank all of you for being here to help us launch the Zev Schiff Memorial Lecture. And we look forward to having you back here for this very special event next summer. Thank you.